rangatira mānau mā ki te pai o te Waonui, tēnā koutou katoa ko Jamie Tahana aho. With the final episode of the year, this week we're wrapping up another massive year in Te Ao Māori and taking a look where things sit as we head into 2023, an election year. Well, with me to reflect on this year is our Henare Te Ua intern, Pōkere Paiwai. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
And we've got a special guest today, our host of Mapuna, another RNZ staple, Julian Wilcox.
Kia ora, bro. Kia ora, haante nā kōrua, kia ora tātou.
Kia ora. Julian, how has the year been?
What an interesting year, eh? I mean, given the way we started 2022, we were still dealing with COVID. From a personal perspective, obviously, we were kicking off a new show. We weren't sure if we were going to be at Waitangi or not, and then we weren't sure if we were going to be in Hui's or not. And then at the same time, building up to the launch of a new year, Māori New Year, celebrated by Aotearoa with an official holiday. So it's a big year.
It's been bizarre though, eh? Like you say, the lows of, well, we started effectively in lockdown. Waitangi, we didn't know until the last minute. I mean, it was, we didn't do anything in the end. But we also had things like Matariki and stuff. It was really, yeah, like you say, bizarre.
Yeah, up and down. If I feel like the words up and down feel right for some reason, they might not be the most correct ones, or they may not be the most appropriate ones, but all over the place, you know, just in contact with people, not in contact with people, going back to hybrid working, going back into the office, getting used to being back in a full office with people, going back to hui, you know, poroporaki, mate, hui mate, tangi. But I feel like we're settling in a bit more now.
Yeah, and it did sort of, like you say, with hui and poroporaki and things, you know, the adaption we saw tikanga do, but also the strains we got put under, you know, do last summer, you know, do we go visit our kaumata or go home and things like that. And
I mentioned settling down a little bit more, but I think people are still caught in the, you know, in the hybrid atmosphere of do I attend in person or not, particularly with case numbers starting to climb. You know, again, what does that mean? What should we do? What's the advice that we seek? What's the advice that people give when we, you know, want to go see our kaumata kuia, when we want to go to a hui, should we, you know, wear masks, all that kind of thing?
And it's discussions we're having, right, because I'm just remembering your interview a couple of weeks ago with Toby Curtis's son, Piripi, and how people have gotten used to watching tangi on Zoom and stuff, but we're debating just to what extent we do that and things like that. You know, it's really forced some tough discussions, but interesting ones.
Yeah, so I've got a bit of a conniption about this stuff with social media. I mean, my view is that if you go to a hui mate or you go to a tangi, you go in person, you pay your respects, you see the person that's being mourned, you pass on your own farewells, and then you leave. And you leave your koha for the marae and all that kind of thing. The reason why I'm a little bit of an anti kind of social media person with tangi and stuff is because, one, there's always varying degrees in which social media is used. Two, you can't really limit who it goes to. I mean, you can put it on your own personal page, but that doesn't mean to say that someone else can access it and then share it or use it in another way. And three, it limits what you can say at the poroporoaki or at the tangi or at the hui mate, because you realise that once you say something, it's going to go out there to all and sundry, even people who aren't related to the person who's being mourned or even related to the event itself. So there needs to be some work done. Unfortunately, I know someone who's doing that work now as a part of their doctoral thesis to look at what we should do when we approach things like tangi. And you're right, this is something that the whānau for Toby Curtis considered and thought about what they were going to do, but it did have an impact. It meant that when the speakers were going to get up and acknowledge Tā Toby and his whakapapa and his lineage and all his familial connections, they had to limit what they were saying because it was going to go out there to everyone in the world. And that's not necessarily the way it should be. It should be just to those who go and pay their respects in person, right? Mm. So those are some interesting things that we're dealing with.
Let's bring in Pōkere here because, well, you've just joined us from 4 years in Japan, but also, you know, you've just returned to your marae in Tamaki Nui Arua, first visit in a few years, but it's been closed, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been closed for basically since COVID began, since the restrictions first came in. First, because of the restrictions, and then they were doing some renovation works on the carvings in front of the marae. So it has been a big moment to have marae opening back up again, and you know, every marae committee's done it differently. They've all got their own ways. Some have been more careful or conservative, and you know, so there is a lot of debates going around about this kind of tikanga and what the marae can and can't limit, I guess.
And what's it like being back? Have you seen anything different in the 4 years? Or
I've noticed a few different things. Well, I'd say one of the big differences I have noticed is there's, I feel, a lot more te reo Māori being spoken, especially on TV and on stuff like that. You know, you see all the newscasters, they do it all the time. They do their intros in te reo and things like that. And even entertainment shows as well have little bits of te reo sprinkled through them, which is something I don't think I saw as much when I was growing up. So that's probably the biggest thing that I've noticed, I think.
Matua Julian is a long time bastion of Māori broadcasting. I think we are with that.
Yes, Matua Julian. Thank you for that, Jamie. I appreciate it. Look, I don't want this to be too kind of internally focused, but RNZ needs to take some credit here. I mean, RNZ really led the way, along with others, in trying to, and people use the word normalise, normalising te reo Māori as a part of its everyday broadcasts. And RNZ still gets a lot of crap about that, by the way. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say crap. Too late now, right?
Yeah, it's a Sunday evening broadcast. No,
yeah, that's right. So actually probably not appropriate at all. But RNZ gets a lot of flack from people who give feedback to shows about the use of te reo Māori.
And we can all share our inboxes, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. Probably mine more than others. You know, particularly following on from Kim in the Morning, you should see some of the feedback I get, which is what happened to Kim? And, you know, things have fallen off a cliff. But anyway, by no means are we there yet. For example, with funding for specific bits of or Māori content, te reo Māori content generally, pales in comparison to funding for general content, right? So there's still a lot of equity issues and equitable outcomes that need to be achieved, in my view, in the media industry and in the media sector, which was part of reviews of the Māori media sector. But yeah, things have changed. I think they've changed for the better. However, there are still pockets of New Zealand society who, for whatever reason, resent vehemently the inclusion of more things Māori into our everyday lives, particularly in the media. But when you think about it, within 200 years, we're close to the 200th celebration anniversary of the signing of Te Tiriti o Waitangi. We're in the right time now to think about what do we want our country to be? What do we want things to look like, not just for Māori, but generally for society in Aotearoa New Zealand? What do we want the country to look like? Things like, do we need a constitutional document, one constitutional document like many other parts of the world, or do we stick with our kind of stitched together fabric of, you know, different bits of constitutional items that we have? Do we need to reconsider, like we've talked about this year, after the passing of Her Majesty the Queen, of our relationship to the Crown and the Republic of New Zealand and things like that? So a lot of these issues are, you know, aligned when we talk about things like our identity and culture as a country. Obviously, next year is the launch of the new curriculum, New Zealand schools curriculum, and included in that is Māori history. And that will tell a lot more about who we are and where we come from. And I think in particular, our relationship and our origins into Moana Nui Akiwa in the Pacific. So, you know, I think that's a chance for us to again turn another page as we approach the 200th anniversary of New Zealand.
You alluded to a bit there, Matiki Mai, but also there has been a lot of other politically developments on the Māori front. You know, there's been debate around co-governance. We've got Māori wards in a lot of councils for the first time. The Three Waters debate has flared up, but you've also got things going on around treaty settlements and stuff. So there's been a lot of, some would say ambitious, others would say conservative steps towards Māori representation and Māori issues on the political front this year. And it's been an interesting year on that front too, both in terms of the fact that it's happening, but that we are also seeing that it might not be now in some fronts. You know, we've heard in the last couple of weeks that a lot of the current government's co-governance efforts are being put on hold largely because there's an election next year, right? Which shows that we might not be in a position right now in this country to have those discussions yet. I mean, Pōkere and Julian, what do you make of the political year in terms of Te Ao Māori?
It's definitely been a big one, and leading up into next year, it's going to be, I think, it's going to be quite a big, maybe a little bit bloody election. I guess we'll see how it all pans out. But yeah, these discussions about co-governance and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head about Labour and the current government perhaps being a little bit gun-shy about these sort of co-governance rules as they're coming under attack from the opposition. So I do wonder how it's all going to pan out next year.
Yeah, look, I think about things like Matariki, which I think was not just a symbolic event. I think it was an historic event that for the first time, certainly in this country and for many other countries in the world anyway, an Indigenous-inspired, Indigenous-developed, an Indigenous event was recognised in the way that it was. Mm. I think given our history as a country, I think that's a major development. And obviously Professor Rangi Mātāmua and others should be congratulated for the work that they have done there and for the work that they will continue to do. So I think there have been some positives when we think about Māori issues. But yes, we tend to focus on issues like co-governance. Why? Because the media talks about them. Why? Because the politicians talk about them. Why? Because we have an election next year. You know, and I wonder, and it kind of interests me that the opposition to co-governance, despite the fact that co-governance is already in play, it has the political will behind it to the point at which things could be reviewed, stalled, and potentially removed. I mean, Three Waters is another example, right? Just days ago in Auckland, there was a pānui that came out from the Auckland City Council, which talked about the places where people couldn't go swimming because of the storm levels that had happened in Auckland, where sewage had gone out into the waterways and into the beaches around Auckland. And yet we're in a position where the government could be thinking about either withdrawing or stalling or doing whatever it will do, certainly reviewing its current approach, despite the fact that the legislation has gone through, by the way. So, look, I mean, these things are interesting, obviously, but from the Māori political perspective, yes, there will be interest in the elections, and in particular in the Māori seats. There is a new Māori MP. He is the MP for Hamilton West in the National Party.
A few other candidates, too, Christchurch Central and Rangitata.
That's right, Dale Stevens.
There's a few strong Māori coming in the National Party, so it's going to be an interesting election of it. And they've said they're going to contest Tāmaki Makaurau, haven't they?
Yeah, and well, they said they were going to stand in Māori seats, yeah. So, look, I'm assuming that means that there will be a lot more of a focus on the Māori seats next year than potentially there was in the last election. I think the other interesting thing will be, at the end of the day, whether or not New Zealand First get there, led by a Māori, certainly has a very strong Māori personality in their ranks with Shane Jones, or whether or not the Māori Party could become, the major political force in determining who could be the government at the end of the election in 2023 and what candidates they will put up in the Māori seats to contest those seats against Labour and National and others. So I think that will be interesting. But another significant event that we've got to think about, I think, this year, aside from Matariki, as you talked about sediment plains and the like, and there have been many of those, particularly recently with Maniapoto, but many others, the determination by the Supreme Court with Wairarapa Māori, another determination by the Supreme Court in respect to Tikanga with Peter Alice. I mean, there's so many issues that have happened. But I think also we have to consider, when we think about the opposition to a lot of Māori issues, what motivates that, who is motivating them, what their motivating factors might be also, and then how do we go about reporting these to the public? And I think in particular of the occupation of Parliament this year, because that was really interesting in the way the reporters reported on that issue to the wider public.
How so?
Well, it's interesting when you have so many different and disparate groups occupying Parliament saying it was about anti-vax mandates, and yet there were so many other causes that were motivated to go and occupy Parliament grounds on the day. You could talk to one person about one motivating factor at one point, 5 minutes later you get someone saying that they were there for a completely different reason. And so the way in which we report these events were interesting. The thing that interested me particularly about the occupation of Parliament and the way that that was reported was obviously not a culmination of events on the final day, and in particular the police moving in, but the way about the who. In other words, who were the spokespeople for this event? Who do the media talk to? What about the conspiracy theories? what about these perspectives that people have, which aren't actually endorsed by any fact or any factual basis at all, but they are just general perspectives and opinions that people have. And what is the role of the media to allow that to be broadcast into the public forum? Many people would say free speech is free speech is free speech, and you should report what you hear and report who you talk to. But I think we've also had to take a step back and think about that, right, in a much more kind of fulsome way than we had previously.
So where does this all place us as we go into 2023, do you reckon, Julian and Paul Kitty? Because we've got things coming back. You know, Waitangi's back on in full swing next year. We've got Te Matatini coming back next year in full swing. But we've also got the all these developments and issues we've had this year. It might be quiet at the moment, but they haven't been resolved. Where do we stand going into, well, what's looking to be quite, you know, a big year?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. I just think with Matariki, I think the second time around we'll really see how we can maybe embed it into our national conscience and make sure it's not just sort of a one-off thing that we do, that we've done, and now we make it part of our calendar every year and we get out there and support it and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. In terms of stuff like co-governance and things like that, I'm not sure totally where we stand, and I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it comes.
I think the other thing that'll be interesting is, as you say, you've already alluded to things like Te Matatini. Again, that was an event that was meant to be held in 2021. The last Matatini was in Wellington in 2019, don't forget. Obviously, Waitangi will be interesting. Again, not just because the politicians will go there. Don't forget, Rātana is always a big event. And given the charged kind of atmosphere that we have in New Zealand at the moment, that'll be an interesting event. I'm interested to see how we will respond to the new New Zealand curriculum in our schools, particularly relating to Māori history. I think that's something that'll be vitally, vitally important for us to think about and consider. And then in 2023, there's some pretty significant events that have been held over. You know, the likes of the 200th anniversary of Mātakitaki Pā that was meant to be held this year. You know, the Hurricanes will probably win Super Rugby. I mean, there's so much.
There's some things that are just fact, you know, right, that you know are coming, but like the Hurricanes victory.
But the other thing I think that for Māori issues, though, things kind of happen organically. For example, think about the Black Ferns and the way in which that team acted as ambassadors for things Māori. You know, Ruby Tui doing Tūtia Mai Ngaiwi after the final. Look, these things play a vital role in bringing us together. And now where we are at, I think everyone will look forward to being back together even more, particularly around those community-based events, and I look forward to seeing those.
Well, we're close to rounding out. It would be remiss of us, because it has been a tough year. We have lost some significant rangatira this year, haven't we? You know, Moana Jackson, Joe Hawke, Aroha Rerete Crofts, Sir Toby Curtis, the list goes on, and Dame June Jackson. Should probably pay tribute to them, but also take stock of what they have achieved when we look at where we are at right now.
Yeah, I had forgotten, but I'm not asking you to play this, but there was a band from Hawaii. They were called Sudden Rush. They had an awesome song. It was called Paradise Found. And it came out in 1990. Oh, look, this is way before Pōkeri was born. But anyway,
it came out
in 1990. At the end of that song, at the end of that song, Moana Jackson was quoted in that way. And he says that we will fight on together forever and ever. And, you know, Moana's impact and the type of leadership and his expertise and his invigoration is sorely missed and will continue to be sorely missed. You know, we talk about Tātobi, and we interviewed his son about his book recently, and his, again, huge contribution to Māoridom throughout his life. You know, Joe Hawke, one can't help but go to Auckland and look up on the hill and think of Joe Hawke and Takaparawha and the Ambassian Point.
We've actually got a little montage here of some of these people we've lost this year, some of their words from the RNZ archives.
You're in this perverse setting where the thief's the judge, and you have to sit down with the thief and the thief's servant. The thief was going to set the terms to even sit down and get some recognition that they stole it off you.
This land here, this whenua, has Ngāti Whātua blood on it. And therefore, it is tapu ground. It is tapu to any high-class residential subdivisions. It is tapu to the maltreatment that the government is seeking to perpetrate on this land, because it is our historic land, and this is the last bastion of our people.
What needs to be addressed is the fundamental injustice, and to address that, we have to look at the past which created the injustice, not to stay frozen there, not to wallow in guilt or recrimination, but to find positive answers to address the problems which will confront us in the future.
You know, if there's an opportunity to help someone, then you grab the opportunity.
It's really about what is right, what is wrong, what is fair, what is unfair, and how do we resolve it.
Well, colonisation has taken 155 years, and so it's not going to be solved in a day or a week. It possibly will take place in my lifetime, but it will take place in the lifetime of my granddaughters. I have no doubt about that at all.
Well, we heard there from some of the rangatira we've lost this year, Moana Jackson at the end there, but we also heard from Richard Bradley, Joe Hawke, Aroha Rerete Crofts, and Dame June Jackson. Well, that is Te Waonui for this week and for the year. I want to thank my guests, Julian Wilcox and Pōkere Paiwai. Tēnei te mihi ki a koutou katoa, kua whakarongo, kua tautoko, kua whai wahi atu I o mātou pūrongo. Thanks for listening throughout the year. Have a wonderful break. Mere kere he mete, kia pai ora, whakatā.